call the roll. Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici.
Here.
Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Gerard. Gilzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Fulvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excused. Butler. Chris Edwards. Crummel. Scott.
The flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Suzanne Bonamici, and she has a short reading as a preface to the flag salute.
Judge Learned Hand was a distinguished legal scholar who served for many years on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. In May of 1944, with the outcome of the Second World War still in doubt, Judge Hand spoke in New York's Central Park to a large crowd, many of whom were new Americans. It was I Am an American Day, and these are excerpts from his speech titled The Spirit of Liberty. We have gathered here to affirm a faith, a faith of a common purpose, a common conviction, a common devotion. Some of us have chosen America as the land of our adoption. The rest of us have come from those who did the same. For this reason, we have some right to consider ourselves a picked group. A group of those who had the courage to break from the past and brave the dangers and loneliness of a strange land. What was the object that nerved us, or those who went before us, to this choice? We sought liberty, freedom from oppression, freedom from want, freedom to be ourselves. What do we mean when we say that, first of all, we seek liberty? I often wonder whether we do not rest our hopes too much on constitutions, upon laws, and upon courts. Those are false hopes. Believe me, false hopes. Liberty lies in the hearts of men and women. When it dies there, no constitution, no law, no court can even do so much to help it. And what is this liberty which must lie in the hearts of men and women? It is not the ruthless, unbridled will. It is not freedom to do as one likes. That is the denial of liberty and leads straight to its overthrow. A society in which men recognize no check upon their freedom soon becomes a society where freedom is the possession of only a savage few, as we have learned to our sorrow. What then is the spirit of liberty? I cannot define it. I can only tell you my own faith. The spirit of liberty is the spirit which is not too sure that it is right. The spirit of liberty is a spirit which seeks to understand the mind of other men and women. The spirit of liberty is a spirit which weighs their interests alongside its own without bias. The spirit of liberty remembers that not even a sparrow falls to earth unheeded. The spirit of liberty is where the least shall be heard and considered side by side with the greatest. And now in that spirit of an America which has never been and which may never be, nay, which never will be, except as the conscience and courage of Americans created. Yet in the spirit of that America which lies hidden in some form in the aspirations of us all, in the spirit of that America for which our young men are at this moment fighting and dying, in that spirit of liberty and of America, I ask you to rise and with me pledge our faith in the glorious destiny of our beloved country. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Courtesies. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have an honorary page today. His name is Austin Burnt, if he would stand up there in the center. Austin is from West Salem, my part of town. He's the son of James and Julie Burnt. He's 14 years old and equivalent eighth grade, but Austin has always been homeschooled, which is sort of unique and interesting. He's been in the homeschool debate class, done service projects. He's a backyard bird count participant. He likes bowling, and my favorite, he's a golfer. His career goals include wanting to be a forensics lab analyst. Please welcome Austin to the chamber today. Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, would you please join me in welcoming one of our other honorary pages? Kaya, do you want to stand up? This is Kaya Larson. Kaya is a sixth grader at Linus Pauling Middle School in Corvallis. She has participated in a bilingual education program since she was in elementary school. She's fluent in both English and in Spanish. She plays in the sixth grade band. She's also, it's not on the sheet, a fabulous quilter. When she grows up, she's interested in becoming an author or a computer engineer or a technician. And Kaya is just a wonderful person. She's 12 years old. I've known her for about 11 and a half years. And I'm so glad to have her here in the Capitol today. So please join me in welcoming Kaya.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce our third honorary page, Aaron Dickey. Aaron's in the eighth grade. takes part in the choir, football, soccer, basketball, swim team, the church youth group, and he is a graffiti removal volunteer. He wants to be a police officer when he grows up. His folks are really involved in Northeast Salem and a park project there, and I'm glad that Aaron's able to be here today.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today is my intern's last day. Andrea Hand is a sophomore at Willamette University, and next fall she is going to spend a semester in Prague as a student, and she has been a great help, and so please extend courtesies to her. Thank you.
Further courtesies? Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed Senate Bills 238, 364, 504, 557, 561, 756, 762, 16, 130, 133, 239, 279, 872, House Bills 5042, 5050, 5051, 2066, 2101, 2240, 2579, 2675, 2823, adopted HGM 10, HCR 9, passed the following House Bill as amended by the Senate, House Bill 2372, concurrent House Amendments and repassed Senate Bill 645. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has signed House Bills 2007, 2079, 2121, 2160, 2191, 2290, 2268, 2384, 5049, 5052, HJM 2, and HJR 12.
Representative Maurer, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent to return to courtesies.
Representative Maurer asks for unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there an objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Grants Pass Sister City is hosting a delegation from their sister city of Rostovsk, Russia. And they are sitting up here in the upper gallery, if I could have them stand up. There are two university teachers of English, Ludmilla and Yurina, one teacher of Russian culture, Svetlana, and one university student, Nikita. This delegation will spend 2 weeks in Oregon visiting schools and universities, visiting natural and cultural sites, and meeting with the citizens of Oregon and Grants Pass in order to strengthen ties of friendship between our two countries through the citizens of these two cities. Thank you.
Welcome. First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that consideration of House Bill 3026 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, May 10, 2007 calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2175 relating to fitness of persons to provide care on behalf of the Department of Human Services. House Bill 2382 relating to paternity. House Bill 2659 relating to regulation of construction contracting trade. House Bill 2765 relating to police officer training. House Bill 3086 relating to motor vehicle liability insurance. House Bill 3176 relating to motor vehicle telematics service providers. House Bill 3527 relating to racing activity vehicles.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading? Consent calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Bill 2325 be removed from the consent calendar and placed in its proper order on today's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 3025 relating to land use planning and declaring an emergency modified definition of land use decision and limited land use decisions to include decision of local government.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3025A. Those who opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Representative Flores is off the floor. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 3025A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Since we have six more consent calendar, I'm going to encourage everyone to stay on the floor and we'll get through them very, very quickly. Clerk, will read the next bill?
Senate Bill 70, relating to audits by Secretary of State and declaring an emergency, directs Secretary of State to enter into agreements with semi-independent state agencies and Oregon Tourism Commission to set financial review schedules.
Question now arises. Upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 70A, those with the opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Flores? Representative Flores is off the floor. Senate Bill 78, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 72, relating to Division of Audits Investigators, expands definition of persons who may be held accountable for loss of public funds or property in an amount of $100 or more.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 72. Those with opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Representative Flores is off the floor. Senate Bill 72, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 166, relating to client trust accounts maintained by real estate licenses, directs real estate agencies to establish optional procedure for specified real estate licenses to disperse from client trust account disputed funds held in the relation to sale, exchange, or purchase of real estate.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 166. Those with opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. And Representative Flores. Representative Flores is off the floor. Senate Bill 166, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 168, related to escrow agents' licenses, authorized real estate commissioner to allow late renewal of expired escrow agent license.
Question now arises on third reading, final passage of Senate Bill 168. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Minnis votes aye. And Representative Nolan votes aye. And Senate Bill 168, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 310, relating to sale of county land, authorizes private sale of county land that is not suited for construction or placement of dwelling under applicable zoning ordinances.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 310. Those of opinion it should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Minnis votes aye. And Representative Krieger votes aye. Senate Bill 310, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk, read the first bill.
House Bill 2640, relating to elections.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2640A. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2640A comes to you from the County Clerks Association through your Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules, where it received a unanimous vote. It has several technical provisions. Typically, county clerks are notified of a change in a voter's mailing address or residential address by the United States Postal Service when mailed ballots, which by law are not forwardable, and they're returned undeliverable to the county clerks. This bill would allow county clerks to update a voter's residence address from the postal notification or to send voter registration update cards, which are forwardable, to voters who have an indicated mailing address change, such as a P.O. box. When a postal address change is indicated, it needs to be determined whether the voter's residence address also changed. When the voter returns the updated card, the voter's registration is then changed to the new information provided. House Bill 2640A deletes the requirement that county clerks update voter registration based solely on change of mailing address notification from the United States Postal Service, thereby allowing county clerks to contact the registrant directly. House Bill 2640 also allows applications for absentee ballots to be sent by email. House Bill 2640 also prohibits electioneering at polling places, such as elections offices, as long as voters continue to wait in line to vote after 8 p.m. on election day. House Bill 2640A also requires a sign displayed at unofficial ballot collection sites, permission to use a visual aid.
Representative Thatcher requests unanimous consent for permission to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is an example of different fonts put in 50-point font, to say that a ballot place is not an official ballot drop site if it's set up by anybody other than a county clerk. And that's all this bill does, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. With regards to these unofficial drop sites, will the operators of them have to register with the county clerk?
To the good representative from Wilsonville, no, they would not have to register any unofficial drop sites with the county clerk's office. The only security issue addressed in this particular bill is just simply, you know, a notice that says this is not an official ballot drop site. to let people know that it is not set up by the county clerk.
Further question? Further question?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. Would this bill stop unofficial drop site operators from tossing ballots out?
No, good representative. This bill does not address any ballot security issues other than a notice in specific font saying that this is not an official ballot drop site. It does not address anything beyond that security-wise. Though maybe it should.
Thank you. Further question?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield? She does. The carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. In the SMS dated 425, I hope I've got the right one, it says what the measure does. In the first line, it says allows application for absentee ballots by electronic mail. My question on that is, what if the clerk doesn't get the email? Is there any provision for that?
Good representative, this just allows an absentee request by email, and if they do not get the email, I guess they will not get their request fulfilled.
Thank you. Further question?
Additional question? Does the carrier yield?
I think so.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. In the last line of the summary on the front page of the bill, it says that it deletes a provision directing the county clerk to update voter registration based on evidence received from the United States Postal Service indicating change in elector mailing address. If a voter has not re-registered to vote, is the county clerk then obligated to do anything with the information that they get from the United States Postal Service other than throw it in a recycle bin?
Good representative, this bill would allow, since ballots are not forwardable, they have to be returned to the county clerk's office. The county clerk would act upon receiving this returned ballot by sending a card, which is forwardable, to the voter. The voter would then fill out whatever information and return it to the county clerk to update the information. In the meantime, the voter does not have the ballot. The ballot is in the custody of the county clerk.
So as a clarification?
Clarification? Did you have an additional question, or you just wanted to clarify?
I want to clarify something from the previous answer. Do I need to have the carrier yield? Or?
Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you, Representative. So when the clerk gets the information from the United States Postal Service, the return ballot, then they use that information to send a postcard to the voter at the new address or at the old address. And if it's at the new address, then what they do is they don't do anything or flag the account, so if the voter doesn't re-register in a future election, they would just go ahead and send the ballot out to them. Am I understanding all of that correct?
What it does is it continues to allow an automatic update when a resident's address is indicated on the return label for the United States Postal Service, but does not allow an automatic update to be made from a label that indicates a change in mailing address only. For some people may want to update their mailing address to be closer to work. Even though they don't live here in Salem, many people that live outside of Salem may want to have their mail forwarded here when they're in the legislature, for instance, to collect their mail. It does not mean that they've moved. It just means that their mailing address has changed. When the information provided is a mailing address, it is unclear whether the voter may or may not have moved from their residence address. And so that risks providing an incorrect ballot to a voter should they have moved. By making this change, we're ensuring more accurate voter registration record.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I've got some concerns about this bill. So with a little sign, and I'm sure you can see that. That the representative from Kaiser held up earlier. When you drop your ballot off, if it's an unofficial site, you're taking your chances. I'm not sure that the voters necessarily understand what kind of chances they're taking, and that if the person wanted to, they could collect ballots and then take them and deposit them into a trash can as opposed to depositing them in an official drop site. I'm also concerned that we're not doing anything about ballot security. This was an issue that came up last session, should have, quite frankly, been dealt with, but because of the staff in the elections office on the Senate side, a bill that passed out of the House with a very large margin couldn't move on the Senate side. I think that it's unfortunate that particular kind of action took place, because one of the things that we need to protect the most is our right to vote and the security of the ballots once we have marked the ballot and are turning it in to the county clerk. I'm also curious about, and I understand the representative's explanation with regards to the United States Postal Service, but I am curious about the logistics of that and how it's going to work. One of the things that county clerks have said in the past is that they find it very difficult to keep the voter files completely updated, and yet this seems like it would be a tool that they would want to be able to use. I'm going to vote no on the bill. I guess I would urge you to do the same.
Further discussion? Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close?
Yes, I would like to make a few comments. Thank you. You know, though the bill does not go as far as I would also like in as far as addressing ballot security, it does make a step in the right direction by giving people a little more of a positive notice that if they drop their ballot in a receptacle that is not set up by the county clerk, that it is actually in an unofficial ballot drop site. This bill was requested by the Oregon Association of County Clerks to update and make voter registration and voter records more accurate, and I, for those reasons, would ask your aye vote. Thanks.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2640A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2114, relating to stewardship agreements and appropriated money.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2114A. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2114A comes to you from the House Committee on Agricultural and Natural Resources with a unanimous vote. This bill is designed to encourage participation in the Forest Stewardship Program by offering new incentives to landowners to participate. The Forest Stewardship Program is a voluntary program established to encourage landowners to exceed regulatory requirements in order to conserve restore, and improve water quality and fish and wildlife habitat. House Bill 2114A establishes a stewardship agreement grant fund and specifies that monies in the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board flexible incentives account may be used to fund stewardship agreement activities. The bill also authorizes both the Departments of Agriculture and Forestry to offer regulatory certainty to a landowner who prepares a stewardship plan. This certainty may extend to both state and federal regulations for which the stewardship plan specifically includes an agreement to manage at levels exceeding current regulations. In the case of federal regulations, the state would enter into an agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or the National Marine Fisheries Service, and the landowner could then choose to manage to the standards in the particular state or federal agreement and receive certainty under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Finally, House Bill 2114A relieves a participating landowner from the requirement to file an individual written plan for operations conducted under the Forest Practices Act and provides a public records exemption for such plans. And with that, I will close and urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Dingfelder, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2114A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2131, relating to address confidentiality program and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2131A. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is a good bill that passed unanimously out of your House Judiciary Committee. It expands the definition of actual address in the Address Confidentiality Program statute to include participants, county of resident, election precinct operative June the 1st, 2008. The Address Confidentiality Program was established by the legislature in 2005. This is a good bill. We ask for your support. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wisden, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Representative Gilman? Off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Off the floor. House Bill 2131A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2190, relating to custody of children.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2190A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2190A passed out of the Judiciary Committee by a unanimous vote. It modifies the statutes related to child welfare in order to bring Oregon into compliance with the recent changes to the federal code covering Title 4E and 4B funds paid to the state to support child welfare programs and services. By bringing Oregon statutes into line with the new federal requirements, Passage of House Bill 2190 will help ensure that Oregon can continue to claim the 4E and 4B funds that support abused and neglected children in the care and custody of the state. Oregon's Title 4E and 4B claim amounts to approximately $125 million biannually. The specific changes to Oregon's welfare statutes contained in this bill include addition to the requirements for juvenile courts and the Department of Human Services to consider out-of-state placement among the options explored for children who cannot return to their own home due to abuse or neglect. The bill also includes a requirement for the juvenile courts to share information with courts in other states in order to facilitate interstate placement of children and to make specific findings with regard to whether or not existing out-of-state placements can be in the best interest of the child involved. The bill increases the minimum frequency of visits of children placed out of care from once annually to twice each year. It also requires courts to allow specific individuals located in other states to participate in juvenile court proceedings in Oregon without having to appear in person. In addition to these changes related to interstate placement of children, the bill also includes a requirement for up-to-date health and educational records to be included as part of any child's case plan presented to a juvenile court. The bill also affords foster parents and pre-adoptive parents the right to be heard in juvenile court proceedings involving a child in their care. Lastly, the bill includes a provision that will bring Oregon into compliance with a recent change to the federal requirements governing criminal background checks for foster parents and adoptive parents. These are not dramatic changes to Oregon child welfare statutes. However, these changes are important because of their role in ensuring that Oregon's continued access to the federal Title 4E and 4B funds that sustain the state's child welfare programs and services. This is a good bill. Please vote yes.
Further discussion? Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Representative Hunt votes aye. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2190A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2196, relating to tax imposed on events regulated by the Oregon State Boxing and Wrestling Commission.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2196A. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Boxing and Wrestling Commission regulates the professional boxing and wrestling events, such as well as entertainment wrestling. The state police receive payments and use as a revenue source to cover policing and security costs included in these and other events. The amount of revenue that the 6% gross tax on gross ticket sales generates vary from one year to the next based on the number of events. In the three fiscal years preceding fiscal year 2006, the tax averaged $83,000. It was as low as $5,000 in 2002 and as high as $123,000 and change in the last fiscal year. What this bill does is modifies the amount imposed on the gross ticket sales of professional boxing and wrestling events to allow a range from 1% to 10% based on administrative rule. It also repeals a statute which requires transfers, which in fact has not actually been used in the last many years. The change in the statute eliminates the requirement of a three-fifths majority vote because the item is actually no longer a tax. By definition, it becomes a fee. Your committee passed it out unanimously with one excused member, and we urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Minnis.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to Carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Representative, does the commission have to come back to the legislature for a spending limitation, or do they just charge the fee and spend the money? Do they come back to the e-board or something like that for some oversight?
This commission has to comply with the same requirements as other commissions.
Which is?
For on their expenditures.
Which is?
I'm assuming, and I have to tell you, I don't know for certain, that they have to get the they have to make a report to the Ways and Means Committee and to the Emergency Board, as other commissions do, as when they change their limitations.
Do you have a staff
additional person? Question?
Additional question.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Do you have a staff person with you that could answer that?
I do not.
To the bill, Madam Speaker.
To the bill.
I am concerned. I've seen a lot of these kind of bills come through that gives authority to agencies to go out and raise fees. I don't see language in the bill that requires them to come back and report to the emergency board for spending authority on those increases. And I'm a little concerned about that, so I won't be supporting this increase. I think it's important the e-board is there to give oversight when the assembly is not in. So I'm going to be voting no on this bill today. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Simply to note, Madam Speaker, that the change in the statute allows the fee to be varied from 1% to 10% based on the needs to pay for the security required at these kinds of events. The nature of the events is that they are extremely variable. I would note that the mixed martial arts, which is one of the regulated items, has exploded in popularity. Fight fans in Oregon have embraced this event. In 2004, three promoters conducted 18 martial arts shows. In 2005, six promoters conducted 31 mixed martial arts shows. In 2006, nine promoters conducted 72 mixed martial arts shows. To date, mixed martial arts shows have been conducted in Portland, Gresham, Salem, Albany, Corvallis, Eugene, Roseburg, Medford, Grants Pass, Klamath Falls, Bend, Redmond, Prineville, Pendleton, John Day, Coos Bay, and the Dalles. Madam Speaker, what this bill actually does is, within a relatively narrow limit, allow the Commission to establish the fee necessary to see that these events have proper security and are properly policed. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2196A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2241, relating to corrections and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2241A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2241 comes to you from your Judiciary Committee with unanimous support, and is intended to give the Department of Corrections the flexibility they need. Since the legislature enacted Senate Bill 267 in 2003, the Department of Corrections has increased its focus on evidence-based practices. Extending that focus to the Summit program at Shutter Creek in North Bend requires a change in statute. House Bill 2241 does just that. The Summit Alternative Incarceration Program was created by the legislature in 1993 and was originally based on a boot camp model. In current statute, the department does not have the flexibility it needs to direct the Summit program to respond effectively to changing inmate demographics and treatment needs. This bill would permit incremental changes to Summit's model, would support ongoing adoption of evidence-based practices, and allow the department to appropriately respond to changing inmate demographics and program needs. The bill clearly requires that any changes to Summit are to reflect evidence-based practices and that the program will continue to include components of intensive self-discipline, physical work, and physical exercise. The bill will also allow the department to hold participants in the Summit program longer than 180 days if they are progressing at a slower pace, as they're able to do in other alternative incarceration programs. Increased flexibility and an ongoing commitment to evidence-based practices make this a good bill, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Good representative from Beaverton. I'm very interested in this bill because nowhere can I find who qualifies for this AIP.
Is that?
Do you know?
Madam Speaker, Representative, this bill is narrowly focused on the program at Shutter Creek and deals with the ability to respond to changing demographics and requires an continued focus on evidence-based practices. It does not deal with the larger questions around the alternative incarceration program.
Further question?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
My concern is that we didn't address who qualifies for the program before we determined what the format of the program is. Are you aware of any bill that no longer allows murderers and predatory sex abusers out early when we've sentenced them to a certain sentence, certain period of time?
Madam Speaker, Representative, I believe there are other bills that are taking on the larger questions around the alternative incarceration program. Again, I'd remind my colleagues that this is a bill at the request of the Department of Corrections that was negotiated with the district attorneys. We heard no opposition in committee. It deals, again, with the ability of the corrections department to have the flexibility to do their jobs.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think this is one of the worst mistakes we ever made in the legislature was to allow this program to be in effect. In my own district, we had numerous individuals who should never have been released early from their programs. I mean, it was a big worry to us, and it would be my thought that prior to determining the format of programs that we determine who qualifies for the program. So I'm going to take the representative at his word and go ahead and vote for the program, but I think everybody ought to work to change it.
Further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Yeah. Along with Representative from McMinnville, I will be voting no on principle. I think this program needs overhaul. It has some positive aspects, but it really needs a major overhaul. This bill gives the Department of Corrections broader latitude to expand programs that haven't been proven to reduce repeat offenses. There have been no solid independent studies to show that AIP is reducing crime. I tried to get an outside audit added to this bill, but was unsuccessful. For those of you who don't know, that there are published studies that show that offenders are getting, with this program, on average 50% off of their sentences, and in some cases up to 75%. They can commit a serious felony, get sentenced to 45 months, and be out in 6. This is really about truth in sentencing. I had personally 8 bills this session to deal with their alternative incarceration program, and I think we in this building are losing credibility with the offenders because what deterrent is there? We had a chance to audit this program, but that did not go through on the Judiciary Committee, and this is really about credibility. So I urge your no vote.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
Very briefly, thank you, Madam Speaker. I just remind my colleagues that, again, this is a very narrowly focused bill that would just allow the Department of Corrections the flexibility to do their jobs. Appreciate the comments from the representative from Kaiser. Those discussions are probably more appropriate in another bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Krummel, how do you vote? Votes no. House Bill 2241A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2310, relating to distributional interest in limited liability companies.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2310A. Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2310 comes to the floor with a due pass recommendation from the Judiciary Committee. This bill will resolve a problem created by legislation enacted in 1993 relating to the rights of judgment creditors against the members of limited liability companies. And if you don't know what that means, it is a stretch. The good Representative Olson from Albany is going to help me out explaining this bill if we need some help, because this is a bill that he brought forward last session, and we want to move it along to completion this session. Boy, I'm into judicial sentencing here. But currently, ORS 63.259 allows courts to charge a debtor's membership interest in a limited liability company with payment of the unsatisfied amount of judgment. But the current statute does not describe how multiple charges against a single membership of interest should be prioritized. Our current statute, when a debtor is a member of a limited liability company, has multiple judgment creditors, the only way to resolve the priority among the court-ordered charges is through additional litigation. House Bill 2310 will resolve this problem by establishing a logical and clear priority for these court-ordered charges based on a first-time in principle. This bill affects the order in which creditors are paid from a membership interest in a limited liability company. It does not affect the amount a debtor must pay. I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2310, and it's my understanding that's the representative from Albany's number. That's 2310, if you'll take it from here. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I was a no vote in the committee, and I wish to explain to you why I'm going to be a yes vote. I hadn't had a chance to read the amendments when they came at us very quickly in the committee, but the original bill had a process in it that would allow for foreclosure on a limited liability company in the event that one of those members had a judgment against them. Would not be the appropriate thing for us to do. The amendments took that out and now allow for the proper collection when a member has a judgment against them as those members are drawn against the LLC. So I will be a yes today.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And thank you, too, Representative from District 22. Anyways, last year this was brought to me during the interim from an attorney out of Corvallis. I had some concern regarding it. I took the whole package, not being really well-versed in civil law, but sat down with, at that time, Representative Bob Ackerman. And we walked through the whole idea and the concept of what it was. And Bob Ackerman most definitely felt that it was an issue that needed some addressing. It needed some cleaning up, some fixing. The representative from House District 22 mentioned that to some degree. But it gives court guidance dealing with creditors as well. So I would urge your aye vote on this.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Madam Speaker, I need to declare a conflict of interest.
Representative Nelson wishes to declare a potential conflict of interest. Please state your conflict.
Yes, ma'am. I have a limited liability corporation.
Representative Nelson declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As we come to this point, I would declare a conflict of interest.
Representative Hanna declares a potential conflict of interest. Please state your conflict.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I am a member of a number of limited liability corporations.
Representative Hanna declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Representative Thatcher declares a potential conflict of interest. Please state your conflict.
Well, since we're heading down this road, I have a membership interest in a limited liability company. Thanks.
Representative Thatcher declares a potential conflict of interest. It is noted for the record. Members, this bill does affect a wide class of people, so likely everybody here would have that same conflict, which means it really isn't one that needs to be stated. But I will, if you feel necessary, we will note it, but we don't think it's needed. Okay, further discussion. Representative Comp, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2310 should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelter, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nathanson, votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2310A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2325, relating to the Department of Corrections.
Representative McPherson. Just a moment. The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2325A. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move that House Bill 2325 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative McPherson moves that House Bill 2325 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And colleagues, just to remind you, this is the bill that was removed from today's consent calendar and placed on the regular calendar. Representative McPherson, to your motion.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2325 deals with the program that's existed for some years in the state under which those inmates who would be incarcerated in the Department of Corrections but for a period of less than 12 months instead serve their sentences in the county jails rather than in the State Department of Corrections. And it has there are cost issues in this, which the counties have been attempting to bring to our attention. And this bill would require a study periodically to determine what the true cost of incarcerating those inmates is. And because of the long-term fiscal implications, there's a feeling that this bill should be considered by Ways and Means at this stage in its process. So I urge your aye vote on this motion.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative McPherson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2325 should be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means will say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2325 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2334, relating to firearms.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2334A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2334, Concealed Handgun License, known as CHL, comes to you from the House Committee on Judiciary, where it received unanimous support. No, I am not a member of that committee. Okay, just making sure you're there. Okay. I appreciate the support from the Chair, Greg McPherson, Representative Wayne Krieger, and the members of the Judiciary Committee for moving this bill to the floor. This bill was originally sponsored by the Oregon Sheriff's Association last session. The sheriffs had several concerns they felt needed clarification in the CHL laws. House Bill 2334 adds three prohibitions to ORS 166.291. Basically, the sheriff of a county, upon a person's application for an Oregon concealed handgun license, shall issue the person a CHL if the person, and here's the 3 points that this bill does now, is not required to register as a sex offender in any state, has not received a dishonorable discharge from the armed forces of the United States, and has not been convicted of an offense involving a controlled substance or participated in a drug diversion program. The bill also prohibits the issuance of a CHL to a person that has been convicted of two or more violations of possession of less than an ounce of marijuana. The bill also does two additional things. It defines county residents for purposes of applying for a CHL, and it amends ORS 166.295 to allow active members of the Armed Forces, the National Guard, or Oregon National Guard to renew their CHL through application by mail. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
I do. Just to enclose, there were a lot of people that worked on this, and I greatly appreciate all those that came, the Sheriff's Association, as well as folks from the National Rifles Association and other advocates for guns. But during the interim, we came to this right now, and it's a really good bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2334A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2473, relating to electrical trade licenses.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2473A. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2473A is actually a very simplistic bill. It removes obsolete classes of electricians from statutes such as Class 1 and Class 2 oil module electricians, limited journeyman railroad electricians, and limited journeyman industrial electricians. Currently, no one in the state of Oregon has any of these licenses, and the types of electrical work they perform are being done by other licensed electricians. In the off chance that someone still possesses one of these licenses, it will be valid until the end of the license term. House Bill 2473A also addresses the shortage of certain types of specialized electrician by reducing the required apprenticeship time for a limited journeyman sign electrician and a limited journeyman stage electrician license from four to two years, and a Class A limited energy technician license from 4 years to 3 years. There is no opposition to this bill, and it passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee. I ask your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2473A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2475, relating to electrical installations.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2475A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2475A comes to you from the Business and Labor Committee with a unanimous due pass. It's sort of a companion to the bill you just heard. This bill allows DCBS with the Electrical and Elevator Board to adopt rules that will standardize the process by which an electric utility may reconnect power to a building when needed. in case after electrical work has been completed or in some cases in case of emergency. As an example, should an individual need an electrical repair after hours or on a weekend, this bill would provide a uniform and predictable process for the electrician and the utility to reconnect power for the individual once the repair is completed. Currently, there is not one standard process for electricians and utilities, thus it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. In some cases, an individual may have to wait until the next business day to have power reconnected after electrical work. This HB 2475 provides a rule that applies statewide and will standardize the procedure. Believe me, you will be glad you voted on this if your power goes out and you need to be reconnected in a hurry. It's a good bill, colleagues. I would encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2475A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2620, relating to inclusion of solar energy technologies in public buildings.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2620. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to bring House Bill 2620 to the floor. This bill comes to the floor with a do-pass recommendation from the House Committee on Energy and Environment. House Bill 2620 requires that 1.5% of the total contract price for the construction, reconstruction, or major renovation of a public building be allocated for the inclusion of solar energy. As the cost of fuel and electricity continues to soar, the growth of the solar industry, an industry which operates on fuel that is effectively free, becomes increasingly attractive. The volatility of the current energy market highlights the need for a source of consistently priced energy. Solar energy is readily available when the demand is greatest on hot summer days when utilities have trouble meeting the demand. Every region in Oregon, from the high desert of central Oregon to the north coast, has the potential to supplement our regional energy needs with solar energy by providing energy grids with a diverse source of electrical generation. Solar energy ensures less air pollution as well, reducing emissions. Solar energy will also, if widely used, would help reduce the need for turning turbines in those summer months on the mighty Columbia. For public buildings, energy-saving solar techniques will pay back the taxpayer for the building in reduced energy costs. Solar energy also contributes to the economic development in Oregon, providing jobs for our state. Each megawatt of solar power generated supports new jobs in system design, distribution, installation, and service, while also promoting the larger solar energy industry. It is hoped that increased demand for photovoltaic cells might encourage PV manufacturing in this state. And colleagues, since this bill was introduced, it has been announced that Solar World is now building such a manufacturing plant in the Hillsboro area. This is a great boon for our economy, and this particular bill will help drive that particular industry. It is really a bright spot in our future. House Bill 2620 provides public agencies the flexibility to determine if a project is appropriate to include solar system. If the project is not appropriate, the public agency is exempted for including solar technology, but must roll the amount of money that would have been required from that project into a future one. This bill also requires the State Department of Energy to develop forms for the public agencies to provide their determination information and report to the Legislative Assembly in 2009 and 2011 on the use of solar design technology in Oregon. Colleagues, House Bill 2620 is a good bill for Oregon. By integrating solar systems into our public buildings, we can save the taxpayer money while producing clean, renewable energy. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, he does.
He does.
Thank you very much. Why is this bill specific to solar energy and not including other renewable energy technologies such as fuel cells, geothermal, biomass, et cetera?
Good question, Representative. You know, I think we've seen a lot of wind energy development. I think targeting solar was just meant to give this particular industry a shot in the arm. It's also solar manufacturing, or PV cells, is also one of our cluster type of industries. It's an offshoot of the use of silicon wafers, where they can actually use the coals, as you would call them, from the chip industry and utilize those for PV manufacturing. Plus, it was also just meant as a push for the solar energy to integrate that specific energy source into our grid, because it's very underutilized in comparison to wind, perhaps. And it was just very specific about giving this particular industry a shot in the arm.
Another question?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
The carrier does.
He does.
Thank you very much. Am I reading this correctly? It would be Section 2, Subsection 3, A and B. These are lines 1 through 7 on page 2 of the A and Gross bill. If I'm reading this correctly, if a contracting agency, let's take a city, for example, if the city of Bend wants to build a new public building, they have to put 1.5% of the value or price of the project into solar. If they find reasons that they can't or don't want to do it in this particular building, that 1.5%, that cost rolls up with the next building that the city of Bend would build. Am I reading this correctly?
That is correct, only in the case where they have state funds involved in that construction project.
Okay.
Otherwise, the way this is written permissively, they could just go on and say we're never gonna do this, and then there's no point to the bill.
Okay, to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, colleagues. You'll notice on the staff measure summary that I was excused the day this work session happened in the Energy and Environment Committee, but had I been there, I would have voted against this measure, as I will be voting against it today. Even though in principle I absolutely agree with and support and want to thank the representative from the Emerald Empire for what he's trying to do here, because many of us want to incent the development of renewable energy for all of the right reasons. And particularly myself, I've got companies in my district that manufacture these photovoltaic inducers and the equipment that they use to put this stuff together. But the concerns I have, there's two of them. One, why is this bill specific to solar and not including other technologies? And two, the roll-up factor causes me great concern. Again, if the city of Bend, for whatever reason, decides on the building that they can't put the 1.5% of the cost into it, that's going to roll up into their next project. And if they don't do it on the second one, then it rolls up again. And that causes me some concern. So those are the reasons I'm going to be opposing this. It's frankly a difficult vote, because I want to support renewable energy. Again, I've got it in my district, but I just think this is not the best way to do it. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Was there any discussion in committee about the rural counties, and particularly those that may be affected by the loss of federal forest safety net monies?
Of federal, excuse me, say that again.
Clarification.
Was there any discussion in your committee about those rural counties that may not have the resources when they're building, adding buildings? For instance, if they're required to add a new sanitary station as a result of other state law changes, was there any discussion about those counties which will not have or those local governments which will not have sufficient resources as a result of the fact that they're losing the federal forest safety monies and won't have as much money to be building and adding the 1.5% for an alternative energy source.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't recall any comments about the federal forest implications to the rural Oregon. I know Representative Smith, I wasn't present for the whole committee hearing on this, but Representative Smith did talk about some of the rural areas as far as them having resources to do this sort of thing. You know, when you're designing a building, you know, up front or designing a major renovation, 1.5% is $15,000 per million. It's not really a lot of money. And so in a proper design, you can take that into account, especially because this bill allows passive solar as well, not just, you know, photovoltaics and also solar thermal. It's just generally felt that any kind of inclusion of these sorts of technologies for energy end up with a payback to the taxpayer because it saves them costs and utilities. I mean, the part, you know, I've gotten several utilities that have supported this bill. It's just a dollar and cents. It makes sense over time. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, just very quickly, I wanted to explain my no vote on House Bill 2620, and at the same time compliment the good representative from the Emerald Valley on bringing this legislation forward. As a legislator who represents a very remote part of rural Oregon, the difficulty I had with House Bill 2620A had nothing to do with the construction or the installation of the equipment or the construction that would go on, but rather my concern surrounded the maintenance and the upkeep. Quite often, the equipment and machinery that would be installed as part of this requirement would require licensed contractors, licensed electricians, licensed plumbers, talented men and women who are very busy and quite honestly are very difficult to attract to the most rural and remote parts of the state of Oregon. And so as the good representative from southeastern Oregon raised, there are remote parts of the state, and trying to attract a licensed contractor to come and to service the equipment and machinery that would be mandatorily installed is darn near impossible. Take locations such as Spray, Oregon, which darn near lie about 140 miles off of the interstate and darn near about 100 miles from the largest community over towards Prineville. Trying to bring a licensed plumber into Spray, Oregon would be darn near impossible. Troy, Oregon, Emnaha, Halfway, community after community, you just can't get the licensed folks you need to maintain this machinery and equipment. So, again, I compliment the effort of the representative from the Emerald Valley. And I could see why folks from the larger communities would vote yes. This is just a difficult issue for rural Oregon. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm perplexed a little because I'm probably on the other side with some of my very good friends and colleagues on this side of the aisle. And one of I hear the concern about rural Oregon, and you all appreciate I come from a rural part of the state of Oregon. Not as perhaps rural as my close friend from Heppner has mentioned in his comments, but still at all a fairly rural area. And the issue with the rural Oregon not having the contractors, not having the people to service and so forth, this I've sat here and scratched my head on this a little bit, but it's been 30 plus years ago that my wife sat on the Pendleton School Board, and they built what was then a new junior high school, later to become a middle school, and it is all solar. I'm not sure, you know, Pendleton is not a poor community, but it's not a wealthy community, and I'm not sure why all of the folks from the western part of the state, the valley, haven't followed suit on this. So it kind of seems to me like this is a trying to pass a law that forces them to catch up with where we've been, colleagues, in rural Oregon now for some time. In which case, I'd suggest maybe that's a good idea. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you. You may have already stated it already, but I'm just wondering, could you please give us an example of passive solar energy that would be approved under this?
Madam Speaker, passive solar is just situating your building so it's pointed the right direction, and you're using windows to attract the heat and preferably also storing that heat that passes into the building. It doesn't require any electrical hookup. It doesn't require technicians to service it. It just pretty much takes the sun's energy, much as my dog would do sitting on the porch in the sun.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate that description of passive solar. It's very good, very descriptive. And this would not call for any licensed contractors and plumbers and et cetera to come and maintain. So, and this is included in the bill, and I think that's a good thing.
Are you asking a question?
No, I'm just
speaking to
responding
the bill.
To it and speaking to the bill. But I also, so far, I've had only for 2 years, but having solar panels on the roof of my business for a couple of years, have not needed any upkeep of those other than just dusting them off occasionally to get the maximum amount of energy absorbed. I will be supporting this bill. I think it's a decent bill, and I urge your IPO as well.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, if you wish to close.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, I do. I appreciate all the comments, and, you know, I did take to heart a little bit on the rural Oregon, you know, having the ability to really to utilize this program fully. But, you know, I must remind you is that, you know, I think farmers in rural Oregon have long used solar energy to operate their pumps, and they've long used, ODOT's used solar energy for their signs in rural Oregon. You know, I don't think it's all that complicated. I realize we have frustration, but even in, I pronounce it MNAHA, there are solar contractors very close in LeGrand that would, I'm sure, be very willing to head up the road to MNAHA to service any kind of solar apparatus they might find in that tiny little beautiful town. So as much as I appreciate the concerns from rural Oregon, I think that rural Oregon is probably one of the best well served by this type of bill, type of industry. They also have the ability in eastern Oregon especially to really take a hold of this industry and utilize it more fully and put some solar energy into our grid. You know, if government's going to say we need to use more renewables, I think government should step up to the plate and show us how to do it. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes no. And all members have voted. House Bill 2620A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2637, related to cyberbullying and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2637A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I want to honor the person that came to our committee with this bill, and that's our Majority Leader, Representative Hunt. And I am talking to you about cyberbullying. Most people can only imagine as a middle school principal and as a previous assistant principal at a high school, I have just about zero tolerance for any type of bullying. Now we have a whole new type of bullying that is more detrimental to student safety and mental well-being than anything, and that's cyberbullying. House Bill 2637 would require school districts to adopt policies about cyberbullying. We worked with the ACLU and a number of other colleagues in order to do a bill that is going to be supported by everybody, with the school administrators, the school boards, and school employees. Personal electronics proliferation in our schools give an opportunity for anybody to bully anybody in at all times. Students can now be harassed via email, text mail, picture messaging, as well as digital photos and videos. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want a video of me in the locker room. But beside that point, students now can be harassed this way, and it is just as harmful and sometimes more harmful as traditional person-to-person bullying. Videos and photos can be taken and sent with cell phone cameras at all times. This presents great problems for the locker rooms, restrooms, and more students carry personal electronics at school. These problems can be and are magnified when photos can be published online and videos can be posted to MySpace and YouTube in just a couple minutes. And if you don't know what those two websites are, I'm sure there's plenty of young parents in this legislature that can tell you about them, because I'm out of that loop too. That's why I want to speak so strongly about this, because some of us just can't keep up with all this. House Bill 2637 will increase awareness of the harm caused by electronic harassment in our schools. This bill comes to you with an unanimous do pass vote from the House Education Committee, and I ask for your aye vote. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, colleagues. I rise in support of House Bill 2637, but I want to point out one thing about the bill that concerns me. Cyberbullying means the use of electronic communication device to harass, intimidate, or bully, and then it goes on to describe that conduct as something that takes place on or immediately adjacent to school grounds. And therein lies the issue, because a lot of this MySpace, LiveJournal, Facebook bullying takes place by the students at home. It's incredibly difficult for districts when that happens, because then there's a double test of does the speech violate the First Amendment and does it cause disruption at school. And I appreciate that, certainly as a parent of teenagers who have been involved in actually reporting some behavior of concern in this area. So I support this bill, but it's just a small step that needs to be taken in this area that's evolving both legally and technologically. And I encourage districts when they're writing their policies to keep in mind the importance of teaching students about responsible use of the Internet, calling in students, calling in the parents to address these serious issues. And we as parents and as a community have a responsibility in that regard as well. So I encourage your support of this bill, but keep in mind there's still more work to do. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson. Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill. To the bill. Colleagues, in our 2001 session, I was happy to co-sponsor with Senator Devlin a bill, an anti-bullying bill that passed both houses unanimously. But what I found out is that it's not current. It's a school. And just like this bill, which is a good bill and we should support it, I think we need to visit our schools and ask them if they are talking about these anti-bullying bills, because the parents apparently don't even know that one exists, and this will be another good one. But I think we need to keep it at the forefront when we're talking with our kids and our schools. Further discussion? Representative Kump, she wishes to close?
No,
she does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Galizio votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Tomei votes aye. House Bill 2637A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2667, relating to judicial review.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2667A. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2667 relates to parole and post-prison supervision appeals. Its purpose is to increase the efficiency of these appeals and thereby reduce costs and eliminate unnecessary delays. The bill is intended to save time and resources for all of those involved in the appeals, including the Court of Appeals, which hears the cases, the Attorney General's offices, which represents the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, as well as the Office of Public Defense Services, which represents indigent offenders. The bill would improve the efficiency of the appeal process by eliminating a requirement that, in every case, a petitioner request and receive the court's permission before filing a brief. Under current law, a petitioner must file a motion for leave to proceed before filing a brief. The purpose of the motion is to identify a substantial question of law presented by the case. After the petitioner files the motion, the respondent files a response. Then the Court of Appeals rules on the motion. If the court grants the motion, the case proceeds to briefing. If it denies the motion, the case is dismissed, but the dismissal can be challenged in the Supreme Court. Thus, current law requires three pre-briefing steps: a motion by the petitioner, a response by the respondent, and a ruling by the court. The problem with this practice, which is different from that of other appeals, is that the three steps are unnecessary in the majority of cases. In two-thirds of the cases, the court grants the motion for leave to proceed and the case proceeds to briefing. In other words, in two-thirds of the cases, the three pre-briefing steps are taken, requiring action by everyone involved in the appeal, and the case proceeds to briefing anyway. In all of those cases, the current process adds unnecessary costs and delay to the process. Importantly, the bill leaves in place an existing mechanism for screening out appeals that do not need to proceed to briefing. Under current law, the Attorney General and the Court of Appeals can file a motion for summary affirmance if they believe that a case does not present a substantial question of law. If the case does not present such a question, the court can dismiss it. In sum, House Bill 2667 would improve the appeal process in parole cases by eliminating a requirement that a pre-briefing motion be litigated in every case, but would allow equivalent motions to be litigated in individual cases on an as-needed basis. As such, it would reduce costs and delay for all the institutional parties involved, the Court of Appeals, the Attorney General, and the Office of Public Defense Services, which would help them handle not only these cases, but also others. I urge your support for House Bill 2667A.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Flores, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Brune, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Voted aye. House Bill 2667A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2713, relating to utility easements.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2713A. Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Bill 2713A. This bill addresses three primarily technical problems that currently exist in ORS Chapter 92 related to land divisions. It provides valuable flexibility and solutions to difficulties faced every day by land surveyors across the state of Oregon. As you can see, the bill was brought at the request of the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. First, this bill corrects a statutory problem that changes the current statute in regards to utility infrastructures and modifies the definition of partition land to help ease the problem faced by property owners who unknowingly purchased unlawfully divided properties. Many land parcels were created prior to the current partitioning statute, and most instances deeds were issued and ownership has changed several times since the initial division. When the current owner approaches their local planning authority to develop the property, believing they own a legally developable parcel of land, they are often told they own an illegally divided parcel. In some cases, local planning and building authorities have allowed the current owner to use some very creative processes to be allowed to develop their property. Unfortunately, this doesn't always happen. House Bill 2713A allows the many property owners who have unknowingly purchased unlawfully divided property to legitimize their legal standing while stakeholders continue to work on long-term solutions. Second, this bill adds the word private to references regarding utilities to recognize all types of utilities that may affect the placement of utility infrastructures. Current law only allows public utility infrastructure in the definition of utility easements that are located on a subdivision or partition plot. Third, this bill clarifies that utility infrastructure cannot be placed within 1 foot from a property corner of a subdivision or partition plan. There's no known opposition to this bill, and it passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee, and I ask for your support.
Further discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
I do not. Thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2713, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Nathanson, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to return to courtesies, please.
Representative Nathanson requests unanimous consent that we return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to alert the colleagues to the presence of a former state representative and current mayor of the city of Eugene. Kitty Piercy is with us today in the South Gallery. I'd like to welcome her officially back.
Yes, welcome back, Representative Piercy. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Further courtesies? The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of House bills be carried over to their proper place on the Tuesday, May 8th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests unanimous consent that the memorials and resolutions remaining on today's final reading memorials and resolutions calendar be carried over to their proper place on the Tuesday, May 8th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 60 relating to hospice programs. Senate Bill 130 relating to restitution. Senate Bill 133 relating to disclaimer. Senate Bill 238 relating to State Department of Agricultural maximum license fees and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 239 relating to regulation of use of real property and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 279 relating to courts. Senate Bill 364 relating to persons receiving mental health services. Oh. Senate Bill 504 relating to attending physicians for workers' compensation claims. Senate Bill 557 relating to Gold Star family registration plates. Senate Bill 561 relating to landlord-tenant law. Senate Bill 756 relating to nurse practitioners' eligibility to provide services under prepaid managed care health services contracts. Senate Bill 762 relating to payment of compensation and non-disabling workers' compensation claims. Senate Bill 872 relating to judges' retirement and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 105 relating to oil spills and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 190 relating to testing for disease at a request of employee of Department of Corrections and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 260 relating to protective proceedings. Senate Bill 311 relating to application for action by local government. Senate Bill 408 relating to termination of parental rights. Senate Bill 409 relating to placement of children. Senate Bill 410 relating to incentive review committee convened by Director of Human Services. Senate Bill 412 relating to reports of child abuse. Senate Bill 950 relating to public records.
Bills read second time are passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Republicans, please get your lunch. We will caucus at noon and appreciate your timely.
Further announcements. Remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 8:30 a.m., Tuesday, May 8th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m., Tuesday, May 8th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m., Tuesday, May 8th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.